Welcome to Reputation Online, a podcast about how individuals and organizations can develop and protect their reputation on the internet. We talk to business leaders, journalists, and PR professionals about the growing importance of social media and the challenges to business communicators.
Hello, I'm Steve Cropper. A suite of new words has entered the vernacular, starting with social media, blogosphere, Twitter, Flickr, Facebook, virtual world, and FARC. That's F-A-R-K. Have to be careful with that one. To some people, they sound just like silly buzzwords, but they're far from that. This is the new language of the online world, and millions of new users pour into this extra media dimension every day. The social media space is becoming so influential, it's causing marketers, PR professionals, journalists, and political parties to review how they manage their campaigns. Despite the stampede to cyberspace, lots of people in business just don't get it. Like so many things, it's often a case of you don't know what you don't know. And it's made worse by the baffling jargon and the fact that lots of newbies wouldn't know their blog from their Bebo. Well, one man who spends his career studying communication and teaching people about it is Professor Jim McNamara of the University of Technology, Sydney. He's a veteran PR professional in his own right, and nowadays a senior academic in the field. And he joins me now on the line.
Thank you.
Well, just a little background about you, if you please. What's the Jim McNamara story?
Well, I suppose you could say I'm something of a media junkie. I grew up in the bush, but at an early age went into journalism in Queensland Country newspapers. So I spent a number of years as a journalist, and then followed the old tradition of journalist ending up in public relations and end up Bill and Knowlton for a while, and then running my own consultancy for 13 years. So a long time in PR, increasingly doing integrated work with advertising as well as PR. And then in the early 1990s, I got very interested in measurement of communication campaigns and measurement of PR, which wasn't being done back then. Did a master's degree by research and then set up Karma International, a media research company, which I then ran for more than a decade before I sold that to Media Monitors, which was very nice. These days, I continue to consult to Media Monitors, but in 2007, I was offered a chair at the University of Technology in Sydney and very, very pleased to take up that as Professor of Public Communication.
Yes, so you've certainly seen an awful lot of changes in your career. And would you say that the rate of change is accelerating, especially in the last, say, 5 to 10 years?
Most people do say it's changing, and it is amusing as you get older. I mean, when I started in journalism, most people would find it hard to believe, but it was hot metal. So I've come from hot metal to social media, which is a huge change. And I believe change is constant ever since the invention of the printing press and things like that. But we certainly are in the midst of what many people are calling the fourth media revolution.
As a matter of fact, there may be some younger listeners who are wondering what you mean when you talk about hot metal. This is actually, they used to make newspapers using metal type, that is to say, a sort of a metal stencil. This is going to sound so horse and buggy age to a lot of younger people.
Absolutely, and manual typewriters.
Oh, yes, the old Olivetti's. I remember them as well. So before we dive into some of these definitions, could we just spell out, what, in your view, what is the significance of social media in this day and age? And why organizations ought to at least be aware of it, even if they don't yet decide to participate?
First of all, today, as of now, there's over 900 million members of social networks in the world. So we're approaching a billion members of social networks. That is a vast audience by anyone's imagination. Facebook alone's got 350 million members. Twitter is fast approaching Facebook. So the sheer size of audiences out there, when we consider a TV network with a couple of million, when you consider almost a billion are looking at social media, that alone says that this is not something anyone in public relations or advertising or communication can ignore. The second aspect is simply that out there in that vast media, social media space, there are people talking about almost every company, every brand, every government agency, every product that's known. So they are probably talking about you and your products and services anyway. And it's really a question of whether you want to ignore that or whether you want to join that conversation and know what's being said about you. That's the line I constantly refer to senior managers to say, people are talking about you anyway. You don't have a choice. The choice you have is whether you want to be part of that conversation so that you can correct misinformation, so that you can put your point of view across. If you ignore it, they will continue talking about you and potentially doing major damage to your brand. So really, you've got to be monitoring social media and then secondly, participating in it. And the days of just getting a few press clippings on your desk, of course, have long gone.
Okay, well, let's get on to the definitions now. This was one of the main reasons we wanted to speak with you, naming names and spelling out what these things actually mean. So let's start with a bigger picture view and work our way inwards. Firstly, who or what is social media?
Well, look, you can break this down into very simple terms. At the end of the day, social media, the social refers to probably three key characteristics that define this group of media. The first one is, unlike a lot of the previous media, social media is highly interactive. Now, there's an element of interactivity in newspapers like Letters to the Editor, Talkback Radio, but in the main, the media we've known through the 20th century is essentially top-down one way by editors and journalists and sort of elites of politicians and business people. Social media is highly interactive, and it really comes alive or brings alive this two-way symmetrical communication. The second aspect is that it's primarily user-generated. So the content of social media, unlike mass media, which is primarily coming from government and business elites, social media is primarily generated by ordinary citizens. The third aspect that ties in with that is that social media are open. And what we mean by open is that they're not controlled. People are not barred entry. There are no gatekeepers in many cases. Anyone can participate. So when you combine the fact that it's open to anyone, which means it's highly user-generated and it's highly interactive, that's what's really defining social media.
A client was telling me the other day that as far as they were concerned, the single biggest difference between social media and what they called for real media was that there was no, you didn't have to go through any journalistic filters to get your message across. You could speak directly to your audience and they could talk directly back to you.
Yes, I think that's true. And the only problem I'd have with that phrase is the term for real media, because many people are saying that social media are more real than our mass media, because our mass media has become very packaged. You know, if you look at advertising, you look at public relations, you know, we craft interviews, we craft speeches. And what you're seeing in mass media is increasingly what sociologists call hyper-reality. Out there in social media land, it is a little bit unruly. There is a lot of misinformation, but it's real people talking about what they're concerned about. So it is the real world. It's the real world that we've got to sell products and services into, the real world that we've got to build business relationships and so on, the citizens who've got to vote. So I think social media, with all of its flaws, and it has many, but it is a reflection of real people talking.
Some people get muddled over some of these terms. Now, blogs, blogospheres, forums. For the newbies, what's all that about?
You know, it's really interesting because it doesn't actually matter what you call these things in the end in terms of their brand names. They're websites. And if you just come back to the basics, Henry Jenkins talked about convergence. And what he's meant by that is all media are converging onto a single platform. Whereas we used to have broadcast and paper and narrowcast and microwave, and we had multiple distribution platforms, increasingly, not totally, but increasingly, all media, even newspapers, are converging on the web. So basically what you've got is a lot of different kinds of websites and blogs and wikis. They, if you think of them as websites, and they just got slightly different formats and slightly different rules. So, for example, in Twitter, it's a short-form comment site. You're limited to 140 characters, so it's for very short comments. Blogs, you can comment on up to a certain length, whereas in some sites you can post large articles. So at the end of the day, I wouldn't get too hung up about what these things are called. It's a bit like arguing whether something is a magazine or a lift-out or a newspaper. It's a little bit academic in the end. They are websites. They are open, interactive websites where people are collectively and collaboratively contributing material.
Blogs, short for web log. It used to be something of a bit of an online journal, but it's blossomed into something else entirely, hasn't it? And it's collectively called the blogosphere, just for people who may not have met the term before or who wondered what it meant. But you mentioned Twitter a moment ago. This is possibly even more confusing to people, a micro blog. And yet Twitter is rapidly closing the gap on Facebook in terms of popularity. So we need to understand tweets and Twitter.
Twitter is an interesting one, and it is causing a lot of confusion among people who are seeing the limitation of 140 characters. We're talking here about 20-odd words, which is extremely limited. But to put it into context, what we find doing research in, say, things like the Australian election and the Obama campaign is that over the years, people have become, found it very difficult to participate in public debate when the way you've got it to participate, say, in politics, is you've got to write a submission or a letter. And it's become a very formal process, which actually is quite difficult for most people. So professional lobbyists and highly educated people can write government submissions, for example. The average person just wants to make a few comments, you know, like fix the pothole in my street or the economy's, you know, in trouble. And so when you look at Twitter, what you've got to understand, it's not a replacement for other forms of communication. If you want to write something more substantial, you choose an appropriate place. But if you, for those millions of citizens who don't really have the capability to write a long submission or a long letter, they just want to make a very, very brief comment, or they want to say, hey, have a look at this. That's what microblogging is about. It's, and there's a lot of research suggesting that young people and many people today just really want to have an informal, quick, very, very brief way of saying something. And that's the function that Twitter serves.
So Twitter, because of the population of Twitter, it's probably a worthwhile platform in that respect. So too, I suppose, is Facebook, which has got the biggest online population of any of these sites, doesn't it? What's the function of things like Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, and Ning sites and all of those?
Well, people talk about social media and social networks, and they're very, very similar, but there is one important difference. And that is what we call the social networks. Basically, they involve members. And whereas even with Twitter, you sign up, but it's a very large, and most websites, anyone can go in and comment, particularly government websites where they want any citizen in Australia to be able to comment. With social networks, they offer a degree of security to people because networks like Facebook have become very, very popular because I can post, or anyone can post comments into Facebook, they can post photos and stories, and you can restrict it with a set of privileges to your friends or friends of friends. And many people like that protection. So not everyone is seeing it. They refer to it as walled gardens, if you like. You're going into the garden of the internet, but rather than just have everyone seeing something, which is the case on YouTube, one of the big attractions of Facebook and to some extent MySpace and others and LinkedIn is that it is a closed network to members, and you can form even subsets within that and share information.
Now, YouTube, of course, is a household name as a video sharing site. And there are a whole lot of others like Dailymotion and a whole lot of others have popped up ever since. Real world television certainly pays attention to this, and the happenings in YouTube even can become a news story.
Ever since we've had media, we've had what's referred to as intermediation. And that simply is media are always feeding off each other. And anyone who's worked in journalism and public relations well knows that stories that are broken in the newspapers in the morning are then picked up by radio during the day, and indeed television at night is very often following up on those stories. And TV interviews newspaper journalists sometimes, and so on. So intermediation has been around ever since media started, and it's no different with social media. So mainstream media are picking up on YouTube or Facebook stories or Twitter stories, and vice versa. Bloggers also write about what's in the mainstream media, which has been documented. That makes it simply all the more important that if you work in advertising, brand management, public relations, you really need to be watching the social media, because sometimes the story breaks in the mainstream media, but very often it breaks with a video on YouTube or a comment on Twitter. And if you're only monitoring the mainstream media, it may be several days. There could be millions of people actually know about that story before you get it. So it is very important to be looking at sites like YouTube. And there's many, many stories of how news has been broken on. I mean, Michael Jackson's death, as one example, was reported on TMZ, or TMZ as the Americans call it, long before the mainstream networks had picked up the story, and most TV networks were reporting a website.
Anyway, look, all of these translations, all of this lexicon of the new language is very helpful, Jim. Thank you for that. Is there anywhere people can source more information and clarification on these terms, get a better sense of what social media is all about?
Well, there's many places, and I'll mention three. As an author, I have to plug my own latest book. In January, I had a book called The 21st Century Media Revolution, published by Peter Lang in New York. So people can find that on Amazon if they just type in my name, McNamara, with an M-A-C, they'll probably find that. So The 21st Century Media Revolution is a very detailed analysis of social media and its implications, with chapters specifically on PR and journalism and advertising and so on. There's also going to be a special issue of the Asia-Pacific Public Relations Journal published later this year, just on social media. That's in production at the moment. So people may want to have a look at that journal. And there also are many groups like the Social Media Club. You can go into Google and just type in Social Media Club, which is a group that has seminars and functions quite regularly. And, I mean, for example, I had 500 people turn up at UTS not long ago for a social media club where we had MC Hammer talking about how he uses Twitter. So there's some pretty exciting things people can do, from a bit of heavy reading right through to joining the social media club.
All right. Well, look, also all that information and indeed a summary of this conversation can be found on our website at www.reputationaustralia.com.au. Thank you very much for your time, Professor Jim McNamara from the University of Technology, Sydney.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for. If you have a comment about this podcast or a suggestion for a future program, please visit our website at www.reputationaustralia.com.au. Press the podcast button at the top of the page. Your feedback and ideas are very welcome. Thanks very much for listening. We look forward to your company next time round.